This is an interview with Dr. Brandon Davison Tracy, pediatrician, father, husband, almost survivor contestant, artist, art gallery owner, restaurant owner, motorcycle rider, you name it, he's done it. He's going to talk to you about being multi-potentialed as an ENFP, how they can be stubborn, how they can question everything. They can just want everything to be fun and refuse to face difficult things and fears, how they overachieve to cover up their fears, talking about shyness versus social anxiety, and taming the monkey brain. If you're the parent of an ENFP, you are going to love this interview. So not only does he have insights as an ENFP, but he has insights as a pediatrician who works with thousands of families and has been in practice for over 20 years, which is a miracle for an ENFP, as you will soon learn. If you don't know your child's temperament, you can get a free temperament test on my website at wendygossett.com. But an ENFP is an extrovert, an intuitive, a feeler, and a perceiver, meaning a free spirit. Have you ever wondered if your child's behavior is normal? Is your child a living puzzle you can't understand? Are you craving insight into the minds of your adopted or stepchildren? Learn how God designed them and how to guide them while also gaining insight into your own joy-robbing patterns. Welcome to Not So Normal Parenting, where we unravel the mysteries of family dynamics from toddlers to teens using team-building tools like Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram. I'm Wendy Gossett, personality prodigy, parenting coach, best-selling author, speaker, and viral embarrassing dancing mom. I raised a son and daughter that are as different as Bob Ross and the Black Widow, and I am definitely not normal. Okay, let's dive into the beautifully not-so-normal together.
Social anxiety was a big one, to the point that if we were at McDonald's, I would be so frightened to go up and ask for extra ketchup if I needed it on a hamburger that I would pay my brother, who was 3 years younger than me, like he'd be four, I'd be seven, to go up and get packets of ketchup for a nickel a piece. So, I mean, I had that much social anxiety, mostly because I probably had a fear of people, you know, not accepting me for who I am, or I'm not smart enough, or cute enough, or handsome enough, or just good enough to even be around certain people. But even at McDonald's getting ketchup, I wouldn't do it. And I wouldn't go door to door to sell, stuff for school. You're selling Christmas trees and you're selling candles. So I would be so fearful going to knock on someone's door that I would pay my brother to go around for the Boy Scouts to do all that stuff. And it was debilitating to the point, I mean, I don't know how it turned off, but it was a focus of conversation most of my elementary school.
Ah, okay. So I was just going to ask you that. So that was elementary school.
Yeah.
And were you kind of running from that anxiety by being busy?
In high school, then it was basically I was trying to find an activity to fill every single spare minute. And that was really just to probably put my mind at ease because I didn't want it to be at ease. I didn't want to pause. So that's, involved in sports and instruments and theater or church or student council or whatever, and then never having a moment to pause. And then, my parents encouraged it because like, oh, on the outside, there's this kid doing everything, but truly with not having that joy in it that you should. I mean, I always looked at myself as like a younger adult. I was like, I should not be doing all these things. And I should be coming home and resting. And I should be coming home and actually be very excited about these little things. And instead it was just the next door, next door, next door, next door. But I put that on myself. I don't think my parents were aware. I don't think we knew what was happening. But yeah, on the outside, it was great.
And so you were a super high achiever.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah.
Because you said that you... we're reading textbooks in your bed at night.
That's almost to this day, but since I was a little kid, even in second grade. And that's a fear of failure. That's probably a fear of not being good enough. And so wanting to make sure every spare moment was spent trying to better myself. And so, yeah, I would take textbooks or math books or spelling words. I'd have spelling words written on my hand going to bed. And then I'd just try to keep on reviewing them in first and second and third grade. Remember that? Because my mom would pat down the bed and look for textbooks like at 10 o'clock at night. And if I had textbooks in the bed, then this is my punishment or my redirection, as I like
to say. You're in trouble.
You're in trouble. Then you can't study as long tomorrow. I don't think she actually did that. I hate to sit there.
Too much studying.
There was something about, you know, that about, like, yeah, you're not going to be able to study as much tomorrow. I can't explain it.
So your parents, they knew that you had this anxiety in elementary school.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think they knew I was doing these behaviors. I don't know if they'd call it anxiety. I certainly felt it was anxiety because I don't think they felt it was as deep. They thought, I think shy was a word they always would use. And I really wasn't shy. I didn't have a hard time in social context if I felt comfortable, as rare as that might be. I wasn't shy. It was more anxiety, but it would come across as shy. There's always kind of a fear of the unknown. I kind of want to be overly prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Things.
Yeah.
And then there's always a fear of death. And that was always kind of... from a little kid, but I don't know where that stems from. We had a lot of death in my family.
Uh-huh.
Grandparents and uncles and or an aunts, and that could be kind of that, but I think a lot of it was happening before that time. It obviously got a little bit worse in high school and college when that was happening, but
yeah. And ENFPs can really want to find an escape from what's going on in their head, because they don't like the thoughts that are going on in their head. Were you aware, like, how old were you when you started becoming aware kind of your inner dialogue and what it was telling you?
I was in elementary school. I mean, because I remember I felt like I couldn't relate to a lot of my peers who I felt like, now I know the words to describe it, but in my mind, I'd be like, I almost felt like I was a narcissist. Thinking, I am so much smarter and so much better than the rest of these kids, although I fear I'm not. Because they don't say, even though I felt I was, my fear was that they won't think I am. But they wouldn't, I mean, I would talk about things are maybe a little ahead of my curve. And then I would have thoughts that were just kind of almost like obsessive and compulsive, that I was feeling like no other kiddo has these thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Or adult thought process. Because when I bring it in contact with my age group, it was clueless, and I wouldn't really bring it up in detail because I was afraid I'd be judged. And I didn't really know that until I was an adult and started talking to people about it.
Yeah. And so now that you are a self-aware adult, what would you, as your parent, have done to help you?
If I had a kiddo that was just not as joyful, I mean, I know that sounds like a corny word,
mm-hmm.
And kids aren't supposed to be doing cartwheels and smiling all the time.
Right.
But when they're involved in certain activities that are their choice and you feel like it feels like work, I think a pause to ask really why we're doing it. Are you doing it for me as your mom and dad? Do you feel like we expect this of you? Or do you expect this of yourself? Is someone putting this pressure on you? And a kiddo might not have the words to articulate why, but if they can articulate that this is fun, I want to do this for me, then that might be, hey, let's look in this a little deeper, because you don't have to do this for me and you don't have to do it for you because we value on other things. And that still doesn't mean that kiddo isn't going to keep doing it, but it might start a dialogue about future things as they get older and have the, you know, arrows in their quiver or the tools in their tool belt to kind of figure out how that stress is manifested and how you kind of navigate it. Because, you know, once you have it, you have it. It's not like you're not broken. There's nothing to fix.
Right.
Right. So that it's not broken, but you do have better ways you can navigate the stressors that certain temperament and personality bring along. And that might sound a little too simple, like, oh, just communicate with your kid. But I think everybody has to do that. But when you recognize that a kid is either overachieving or doing a lot, you have to figure out what the motivation is to why you're doing that.
For sure. And I think for an ENFP, they tend to be a very positive type that doesn't like to face anything negative. In fact, you know, that's why they're so busy, because they are running away from the pain,
right?
Because they want to keep this positive persona,
which I would think would also be part of that self-acceptance. Like, you're afraid if you show anyone your pain or their what's going on under the surface, that they're not going to like you as much. Now, you had mentioned that you kind of had a buddy that shook you and made you realize some of this.
So it kind of, that's how it was kind of on the road to kind of recovery, I suppose that's how you'd say it, where I was married in college to a person that wasn't very healthy for me. But of course, I didn't want to admit there was issues with it.
And what was not healthy, just so that,
because we were both really negative with each other, and I'm a very positive person. Mm-hmm. And so was she, actually. And there was a lot of conflict. It's a long story, but we did not build each other up. It was pure, we were just dating from the very first day of college, so this should work out. And then I got sick, and she's, you know, went through my cancer diagnosis with me. So I guess she must be the one, if she's the one doing that. And then, so we got married, and that didn't work out well after about a year and a half or 2 years. And then when that happened, that's when a buddy basically shook me and said, dude, you're allowed to be angry. You're allowed to feel pain. This sucks. You're not a failure. You're putting way too much on your plate. And this is one of those things that you need to live with this. You need to live with the pain of it. You need to live with the negativity of it, because you'll come out better, but you need to really search inside what happened there. And that was a friend that did it. Now, the bummer is I had friends actually do it before we were divorced, but I didn't hear it because I still wanted to put up the perception that everything was okay. And then once a divorce is out there, you can't hide that. So that I needed something dramatic. And even when I had my cancer diagnosis, which was fairly dramatic and out there, I could still kind of navigate that and always push it to positive, because you kind of have to get through it. You can't really have a lot of negative energy there. So even that one wasn't an eye opener. Much in personality.
Amazing. That is so amazing. Wow. Even cancer wasn't an eye opener, because you were able to positive your way through
that.
Well,
yeah, you don't want to bring up anything negative, because you feel as a cancer survivor or a person who has cancer, you actually, this is my opinion, I think those human beings, kiddos or adults, have it easier in some ways than their family does, because the family can't do anything. It's out of their control. I'm more worried about how my mom feels or how my girlfriend feels or my brother feels or my dad feels, because I want them to be happy. I don't want them to be stressed about me. So I think that burden is actually harder on them than it is the person that has the disease sometimes. The
emotion. It's so interesting, because, you know, that is kind of how personality develops, is that you're looking through this lens of your own childhood patterns. And one of your childhood patterns is be happy. Be positive. Don't, you know, run away from the pain. If you feel anything discomfort, run away. And so you're looking through that lens at others, and you're thinking that they expect everything to be happy and positive and fun all the time. So that's where that social anxiety is coming from, because you feel this pressure to kind of always be the one making everyone happy.
Yeah, I could say it's always from a positive source. It's I don't think it is, at least for me. I think it's from a selfishness that says, if you guys are unhappy, I'm unhappy. So I don't want to be unhappy. So I'm going to make you guys happy. It's the same thing when, you know, I'd walk into a room in high school, like if it's a party, and I could immediately sense if the party was going south, if someone was crying in the corner, and I was like, oh, well, he's so nice. He's going to go and take care of that girl on the side, because she must have just broke up with a boyfriend. But it wasn't as altruistic as it sounds. It was more, I don't want you to be sad because it makes me sad. And I don't want this party to be a dump because I'm uncomfortable for you, because that party is a downer. So it would, from the outside looking in, it'd be like, oh, Brandon's so great. He's the straw that stirs the drink. And he's fixing everything, and we want him at every party. But it's more like, it's my own burden, but it's actually from a not really altruistic place.
Would you say that you are an emotional sponge? Like, you pick up on negativity and just soak it in. And so your coping mechanism was to be positive and to make the people that were bringing you down happy. So
that's actually great for medicine, especially in pediatrics, where a lot of it is not. So that's a positive.
Yes.
In pediatrics, you can sense it and feel it, especially after you've done it for a while. And when kids can't talk,
yes,
you have someone else advocating for them, a lot of it's intuition, a lot of it's feel. Of course, you're getting a report from a caregiver, but immediately that's very easy for me to slide into to make that better.
And I bet you anything, that is why ENFPs feel like they're introverts, because that's a really common thing. And ENFP is an extrovert because they're very outward. They're constantly doing outside of themselves. They don't like that inward time. They like to be outward. And so they are extroverts, but I think they feel like they're introverts because they are such emotional sponges. That is introverted feeling, which is your co-pilot function. Everybody has two introverted and two extroverted brain functions. And it's like the passengers in a car. And I'll tell you what your driver is in a second, but your co-pilot, which is your introverted brain function, is introverted feeling. And introverted feeling is deep, deep, deep empathy. And so you are taking on everyone's stuff all day long, and it just drains your battery. And so it makes you feel like an introvert. And then you fill up your battery by doing, so extroverted intuition is your driver. And extroverted intuition just has this curiosity about everything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They just want to learn about everything and experience everything. But it's different from extroverted sensing, because extroverted sensing just wants to do and go to the party and have that extra drink and do everything to excess just for the hit of fun. Whereas extroverted intuition wants to do it to learn and to discover and to find out why. And it's just this constant curiosity. Did your parents tell you that you asked why a lot?
No, they didn't, but teachers always did. I would get in trouble for asking too many questions.
And did they see you as a challenger because you were?
Yeah, but I was probably so, I was more of a challenger in college. And in high school, that's where it kind of turned off. I don't, I turned off. I was always told I asked too many questions. And sometimes I think teachers thought I was making it up just to be starting conflict, which is the opposite of what I wanted to do. I didn't ever want conflict. So I'd sometimes put it off like, oh, you're right. I'm just doing that because I don't want to make you feel bad. But when in high school, for whatever reason, I felt a little stronger, mostly because I don't think my teachers were very strong. So I think I could actually step up to them. And like, I wanted to go to college because I wanted to succeed. So if they weren't giving me what I needed, I felt that backbone for that, which I certainly didn't have when I was younger. But no, that was always a constant issue. In fact, as a little kid, I'd get in trouble for asking too many questions all the time.
Interesting. So they would take it as a challenge and that you were trying to derail things. Yeah. And so that is something else that ENFPs tend to struggle with is choices. Like, they don't like having their possibilities limited. So even though...
That is very, very true.
Yeah, even though you felt like you were too busy and you would have maybe liked your parents to rein you in a little bit, had they tried to do that, you would have not liked that.
No, like, and that's almost my intuition is like, if they would have said it, I would have denied it.
Right.
I think it would have started me on a pathway for when I was able to accept that, or when my buddy had to shake me, it would have resonated maybe sooner because my parents had already started the conversation. Because once they would have, I'm guessing, if they would have said something, I wouldn't have forgot it. Mm-hmm. I would have denied it, but it would have stayed with me and I probably would have just kind of had it in my head. It might have prepared me for later.
But, yeah, and that's what I try to, talk to my parents about is just having that awareness of how their kid is wired so that they can kind of, point out the patterns to their child. And, and for an ENFP, you don't want to trap them because that is a trigger for an ENFP to feel like you are limiting my choices, you're limiting my possibilities. But I've also
noticed the only thing that makes me angry, actually, I don't get angry very easily. Justice and all that matter, but the thing, limiting choices is
and so it is a huge trigger for an ENFP, but I've seen a lot of ENFPs really struggle around the college process, when they are getting ready to pick a college, to pick a career, they can really struggle because they are now limiting their possibilities to one college, one major. So how did you navigate all that?
So I don't know if college is a very good example. We didn't have any money, so I didn't have a lot of choices. And then I had a scholarship to my college. That was like, okay, financially it makes sense. I have to go here because I have a scholarship. But in med school, it was even though I was a cancer survivor and I felt this was a calling, I almost quit med school twice. I almost quit residency twice because I just felt like this is now going to be it. And I want to do something else in addition to, but the sacrifice had already been made and it would cost a lot of money. I mean, I wanted to get out so bad just to do something different. I tried out for the original Survivor show during residency. And if I just get on the show, I have to get out. They have to let me out because I'm on the show. And so I actually left a rotation, which is unheard of. And I would go to movie auditions and I would go to casting calls, just thinking for whatever reason, I thought then that'd be an easy out. It would be an excuse. Oh, he's going to be in Hollywood or he's going to be, I mean, that's ridiculous. I did get a callback though, twice for Survivor. Just didn't make it on. That was the season. That season one.
Wow. Did you have the ponytail at that time?
Oh yeah. The ponytail, the ponytail's been ever since I lost my hair with cancer. I never have cut it. So that was that's
my reminder
of the cancer diagnosis.
Well, and you know what? That's so interesting because introverted feeling, all people that have it, they tend to like to express their feelings in an intangible way or a nonverbal way. And I've heard many people with introverted feeling have some sort of symbolic representation of their feelings in their appearance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and for you, it's your hair.
It's
a lot of people with introverted feeling will, you know, go for tattoos or, you know, they'll do something that is a representation of their feeling or their identity in their appearance. Mm-hmm. And some people will do it like on a day-to-day basis. Like, how do I feel today? I'm going to wear black, you know, or, oh, you're wearing black today. I wonder what that means.
I always wear black, actually.
Have a dark.
I'm 51 years old. I got to do a
dark soul.
It's a slimming color. Yeah, that's right.
Taming the monkey brain. That is a huge issue for ENFPs. Is that monkey brain that just has a hard time staying the course?
Yeah.
And so you were kind of in a trench with med school and all that, and you just felt like you had way too much invested to let the monkey brain win. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that makes sense. That does.
Yeah.
Too much invested, and then I also felt long-term that I'd be a failure if I didn't finish it, but the goal was to finish and then just move on to something else. And then if it wouldn't have cost a lot of money to go, I would have probably finished and then moved on to something else. It would go to law school, or be a teacher, or be a police officer, or I mean, I would have done anything different just to go into something different. But I'm glad now, and I feel more comfortable in my own skin now over the last 5 years than I ever have.
Well, and it's so interesting because here you've been doing the same thing for 21 years, and so many ENFPs will jump around from career to career. I mean, it's not unheard of for an ENFP to have 10 or 15. careers, you know, by the time they've reached your age. Yeah. So I'm sure that many ENFPs would just look at you in total admiration.
I would have done it if I wouldn't have had that cost and burden to pay the loan back, or and my wife. I love medicine. So I mean, since I love medicine, I always, the more I did it, the more I love it. So it was more like, I can't let this go. But even when I talk to my partners and my staff, they all joke that, well, you're gonna be the first one leaving. I mean, we know you're gonna be the first one retiring. We know you are. But actually, I might be the first one retiring, but I couldn't leave it in its entirety because I just miss it too much. But that's really only an eye-opening thing in the last 4 or 5 years. because I love it too much now. But that I wouldn't have known that as a kid. And that maybe is why we need to, I mean, if someone would have made me stay in medicine, I would have resented it.
Yes.
My decision. I think now it's, of course, way healthier and better for me. Because to move around and bop around, you're going to be unsatisfied because the issue is you, not the job. And you're bringing yourself to every job you're going to.
That's right. Wherever you go, there you are.
When my day's over, what you know in medicine, your day is never over. But it's more predictable in some ways. I try to leave it at the office if I can, and then do my other things that are just in my control, whether it's the chickens or my kids or art or the restaurants or whatever.
And you mentioned that you like to do these pursuits alone. And so that's interesting. So why do you think that is? Because it's your curiosity that you're trying to satisfy, and you don't want to maybe entertain, have to feel like you're entertaining.
Yeah, I think when I had the gallery in the studio, I would more enjoy the painting by myself late at night. I'd be there from after work, 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. And why I eventually closed it after a few years was you had to open your studio the first Fridays of every month. First Fridays in Denver is when you go down to the art district and you go to everybody's studio and gallery. And initially I loved it. It was great having the studio open, the gallery open, people coming in. And then eventually I'm like, I felt like I had to entertain, and I really don't care what you think of my painting, to be honest, because I'm doing it for me. And I didn't want to have to defend things, and I didn't mind the critiquing. I just didn't want to have to be on.
I love that. I'm going to stop you for 1 second because I want to point out that I'm sure you guys have figured out listening that Dr. Brandon had an art gallery. One of his multiple talents is he is an amazing painter. I love what you're saying because that is the definition of introverted feeling. Once again, is you are expressing your individuality, your identity, because introverted feeling is very much who am I? And that's probably where that anxiety comes as well, because people that have introverted feeling is number one, which is an INFP. They're all about who am I? Who am I? Who am I? And so people are a reflection, and their reaction is a reflection of who am I? And when you're doing those paintings, that is putting yourself out there, and it's introverted feeling is not like what I have, which is extroverted feeling. And also Sarah has extroverted feeling as her co-pilot. They care about what others think to the point where, well, they'll bend their convictions and they'll harmonize with other people, whereas introverted feeling doesn't. They just put it out there and they're like, you know, if you don't like it, that's going to really stink.
It's going to come across as very like non-moldable and non-team player.
But it's just your own convictions. It's like your deep convictions. And so by putting it out there, you're kind of saying, okay, yeah, so I am opening it up for your critique, and that's going to sting because I'm not changing. And you're kind of attacking my identity in a sense. Yeah, and it can be stubborn. It can take on that feeling of being stubborn. Like on the surface, you're the most easygoing guy in the world, positive and life of the party, this straw that stirs the drink. I love that. But you've got that introverted feeling that's like, heck no, I'm not changing my conviction for you. Let's talk a little bit about your baseball. So you were an athlete, correct? Mm-hmm. How early on were you an athlete? Did you feel like you were coordinated as a little guy, or is that something you just had to really, really work on? Or
I was not coordinated as a little guy. Yeah, you can ask my family about that. Something clicked when I went through puberty and I got more coordinated, and a little bigger. I'm not a very big person, but So it was basically in high school, freshman year, and then it just clicked. And I worked on it all the time because I wanted to be better. So I would be working out when other kids weren't, and I'd be working on stances or strength or whatever. And it clicked. But that was another outlet, just because it was different. And truly, it was just I felt like I had to check the box. of like, okay, so there's intellect and there's social stuff and there's spiritual and church stuff. And you go out in the environment and you help the needy. Oh, and I want to do athletics too. So it was more like a box check for me. Not even that I really liked it, but I didn't love it. But I just felt like it was a box I had to check. And if I'm going to do it, I better be good at it. And I wasn't great, but good enough. And yeah, it was most of my high school experience. And yeah.
Well, you were good enough to receive a scholarship, weren't you? Or
scholarship offers. I didn't really go through once I got cancer. But I played varsity for 3 years in high school and was an all-city football player.
And ENFP has a super fast acting brain. Like, you can connect the dots so quickly. Like, ENFPs are big picture thinkers. Like, they want to get the gist of something quickly. And they glaze over with details.
And I don't, and it frustrates me and it frustrates my partners at work because I do not understand. I do understand as an adult, but why we have to meet for 4 hours about a certain subject or topic when I can pretty much boil it down within 4 minutes and make a decision and move on. As an adult, I have to tolerate, sounds horrible to say that, but I have to be slower and more deliberate about it. But and that would come across again being stubborn, narcissistic, and selfish because I can connect the dots in my own mind. I could be wrong and boil down the data quickly. And then I don't want to sit there and keep on talking about it because once the decision's made, I think I've got it. We're probably very good emergency room physicians and surgeons. Pediatricians is probably not very many of those, but yeah, that's a good skill set for other things.
You just practiced really hard because you felt like that was a box you needed to check. And because I found that some ENFPs are not that competitive because they are more relational and they're more excited about being a team player. You know, they want to be the nice guy.
And I'm not very competitive. The only thing I compete with is myself. Like I would not, when we lost in the state championship in baseball, my whole team was crying and I wasn't, and I still didn't understand to this day. I'm like,
oh, interesting.
Crying and upset. Like I want to do well, but it wasn't all I needed. I wasn't going to win for the coach. I wasn't going to win for the team. It was win for me. And since maybe it's because I'm more of an absolutist, it's like, well, if we lost, but we gave it our best shot, it didn't matter. It really just didn't matter. But I wasn't like a sore loser, but I certainly wasn't a sore winner. It didn't matter ultimately. That wasn't why I was doing it.
I bet you if your dad would have been one of these really hard driving sports dads, and tried to push you into it, that probably wouldn't have went very well.
Yeah, and he was the opposite. He was not hard driving sports dad at all because he wasn't very athletic and really could kind of care less about the sports stuff, which is probably why I did it because it's kind of my own thing. Because I was one of the good guys on the team and the coach was expecting too much of me, I felt, and tried to make an example of me. And we kind of had it out. I didn't have it out. He was just in my face. And I think I handled it well. I just let him do it. But I was going to quit because I was kind of more like, I'm just doing this for me. And I think I've already checked the box. So I don't need to do anything more for this team. And I stayed because I didn't want to look bad. I didn't really stay because I liked the sport. I just stayed because I didn't want it to be perceived that I was a bad person. Yeah, I got a guitar for graduation in college and I didn't play it for 20 years. And it was so frustrating to me that I never played it. Then I played it 3 years in a row and got good enough that I could check the box and I haven't picked it up since. I wanted to ride a motorcycle. I was so frustrated. I didn't know how to ride motorcycles. So I took lessons to ride, started riding a motorcycle and then haven't rode my motorcycle for 4 or 5 years. I just wanted to check it. Like, okay, let's move on to the next thing.
Now that introverted sensing is the inferior function of an ENFP. And so what that means is ENFPs can kind of be unaware of their own body functions, their own physical sensations when they're really little, especially. And so parents will report that their ENFP kid might talk too loud, or they might brush their teeth too hard or comb their hair too hard, or they're just kind of unaware of their own bodily needs and their bodily sensations. they're also, like we talked earlier, very adverse to details about the steps it takes to get from point A to point B. They just want to go from point A to point B and skip the steps. And so how did you cope?
It's more like that now. You can ask my wife about not being aware of my voice or how loud or quiet or disturbing I might be. You can also ask my staff that. It's very, I have a feeling. But as far as the detail from point A to point B, that even to this day is a struggle. Medicine helps that because you do have to understand the steps in between. But for everything else, whether it's changing the oil or, you know, mowing the lawn or getting a new printer at home, it's almost paralyzing. Because if I can't get to point A to, I'm not willing to spend the energy unless it's relatively simple from A to B, probably because I'm now an old fuddy-duddy. And that's just been kind of forever. That's why, thank goodness, I have a partner that's willing to let me try and fail. Because if you're not doing the stuff in the middle, you're often going to end up at the wrong point B. And then if you're at the wrong point B, you have to start again.
So she lets you learn from your failure. Well, that's what I tell parents with your type. As I said, let them learn from life. They're going to learn so much better from the School of Hard Knocks. Do you have a degree from there too?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Multiple degrees.
Yeah, multiple degrees. I have a PhD.
No. Yeah. This has been so awesome talking to you. I knew it was going to be. Dr. Brandon, everybody, what a guy. I would love, but yeah, and I will put in the notes just, you know, where to find you if, you know, everybody watching this is going to want to change their pediatrician now and have a motorcycle riding, ponytailed, restaurant owning.
With a helmet on.
Pediatrician. Uh-huh. And I know, I've worked with people, you know, your patients that have moved out of state and they still come to see you when they're back in town because they don't want to change pediatricians. They're so loyal to you. So
that's the best part of the job.
Yeah. Well, this has been a pleasure. And thanks for being so open to share about your life's journey. I know this is going to help parents that have a little ENFP and they can only hope that that little ENFP turns out to be a Dr. Brandon someday.
Thanks, Wendy. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening. It would be way too normal and expected for me to ask you for a review. So if you learned something new or just wanted to show the love, instead I'll just say, eat some soup. And that'll be my special way of asking, but not asking. So eat some soup. It'll make you feel all good and warm inside. And as a thank you, I'd love to offer you two free resources. The first is a beautifully illustrated ebook entitled 14 Instant Ways to Form a Deeper Connection with Your Child. And the second is a free child temperament test and video for gaining new insight into one of your children. You'll find these free resources at wendygossett.com. And you can also check out many helpful articles as well as buy a copy of Your Child's Inner Drive, Parenting by Personality from Toddlers to Teens. Or maybe you're ready. You're tired of riding the cranky train because there isn't enough peace in your home. So make the move and sign up for my Understanding Your Family 101 Brain Mapping Personality Session. There are scads of helpful videos on my YouTube channel at Wendy Gossett, including the silly one of me dancing in a blizzard on the highway, embarrassing my child. So until next time, friends, keep dancing through the quirks and chaos of parenting, because who needs normal when you can thrive in the extraordinary?